Hi, Marty Lurie here on KNBR 680, joined by Steve Gilbert, MLB.com. He's a beat writer who covers the Arizona Diamondbacks. Steve, opening day, the opening of a season. We all want to know the answers right away, but my goodness, there's another 150 games to go. How do we keep it in perspective?
Well, I think that's really what you have to do is realize there's 150 left to go, and that while each game counts just as much as the next, this is a marathon and not a sprint, and a long six-month season, so it's... If a team loses five or six in the middle of July, sometimes we don't even tend to notice. If a team loses five or six to start the season, then it could be a disaster, or what people think is a disaster. So that's one of the things the Diamondbacks have had to do this last couple of weeks, is kind of try to keep in perspective that 10 games in does not make a season.
Steve Gilbert joins us, MLB.com. He covers the Diamondbacks. Very interesting March for you. Of course, the 1st of February as well, coming down early, getting ready for the season. The Diamondbacks opened in Australia, Sydney, Australia, against the Dodgers. And, of course, people talk about the ball players getting ready for it and the intrusion into their lives. What about for the writers? How do you even get ready for this thing?
Well, you know, like you said, it was spring training started a week earlier, so everything seemed a little bit longer. And it was an odd spring just because you start earlier, and then they start regular season games on March 22nd. They played one March 22nd, one March 23rd, and then came back and played another week's worth of spring training games before the regular season opened again. As a matter of fact, the Diamondbacks had four different opening days this year. Sydney, then their own at home, then they were the Colorado's opener, and they were the Giants' opener. So it was a little bit of, so far it's been hard for them to kind of get into a regular schedule. I think they were really happy once the Giants' opener was done this past week, so they could kind of now get into the regular grind of the season.
Steve Gilbert with us. You know, people ask me about opening days and how they differ from year to year, and I said, well, if you're a champion coming back, you wonder, can we do it again? If you're a team with new players, you say, wow, are these new players going to make it happen? Or if you're a team that's really not so good, you say, let's at least win opening day and clip the standings out of the newspaper. Now, where does Arizona fit into that?
Well, I think they're trying to get over that hump, 81 and 81 in back-to-back years, and they're trying to find whatever it might be that can get them, back to where they were in 2011 when they won the division. It hasn't been a great 2 years for them. It seems like 81 and 81 wouldn't be bad, but when you're just winning two, losing two, winning one, losing one, it can make for kind of a long summer, and that seemed to be kind of their thing. They didn't have any really long winning streaks or very long losing streaks the last 2 years, so it's certainly something that they looked at this season as a chance to kind of, you know, get, they were hoping to get out of the gate in good stead, and just haven't, but that's kind of what their mindset was.
Yeah, looking at the new players perhaps, and hoping to get out and see what they can do on the open road. Well, you hit the open road, and I think I really enjoy having you on, and we chatted about the trip to Australia and just the logistics of going down there. What was it like on the plane, the food, and how you handled it, and then getting to Sydney, and you do a great narrative. You wrote beautifully about it. The city of Sydney, the cricket history and everything else. I think the fans would enjoy hearing some of that from you.
Well, it was an interesting, you know, it was a 15-hour flight or 16-hour flight going over there. And, you know, the players all had first-class accommodation, so they did get to have those seats that fully lay down where they could sleep. So they also got to bring a guest, which they all really appreciated. A lot of them brought their spouses, significant others, and some brought their dad, some brought their brothers. It was a good time for them. They got a chance then to get out and see the city a little bit because they had 4 or 5 days to get acclimated to being over there. We actually left on a Sunday night and arrived on a Tuesday morning. So St. Patrick's Day kind of disappeared for the Diamondbacks people this year. But they did get out in the city and get to see some things. They went to the zoo. They went to a couple of different beaches. I think it was just nice for them to, you know, they seemed to really enjoy it and enjoy getting a taste of a little different atmosphere. And the ballpark, they did a tremendous job turning a cricket ground, a historic cricket ground, into a baseball. And you would not have known that it was not a baseball field when you walked in and looked at it. Now, they have these old section that kind of reminds people, reminded the players of like Fenway Park, the way the stands looked. And those were built in like 1850. As a matter of fact, there was one for men and one for women. So that tells you how long ago those things were built. But they got to walk around and they got to see the historic clubhouse locker room where the home team in Sydney has dressed since the 1800s, and something that they usually don't allow people into. And I know that a lot of the writers in Australia were saying to us, wow, you got to go in there. You know, we cover the sport and we don't get to go in there. So it was just really nice, I think, from a history perspective. I think they all kind of enjoy just seeing and getting a feel for something that's over 100 years old. It's pretty amazing.
Wow. Steve Gilbert, a great story of the Diamondbacks going over to Australia. And, of course, Steve Ryder covered it. How'd you sleep on the plane? Did you do all right? Is the food good? Movies? What's the plane ride like?
Well, I'll tell you, that was a nice thing. If you're going to fly to Australia, I highly recommend taking a charter with a big league club because, yeah, we did get to spread out. We had our own rows, most of us, so I did get to lay down and sleep 8 hours going and 7 hours coming back, which makes a big difference. Coming back, it was kind of like going into a time machine because we left on Sunday night after the game and we arrived back in Arizona Sunday afternoon. So I kind of got two Sundays and lost a Monday, which most people wouldn't complain too much about. But, yeah, they had all kinds of movies. They had hundreds of movies to choose from. All the with the Oscars coming up, they had all the Oscar movies you could watch. So it was really a great experience. It was it's been a long time since I've been on a plane and actually had some really good food. But they had some good food for the players and the rest of us that were on there. So it was a great experience overall.
What does a cricket field look like? Now, we know what a baseball field looks like, and I know they converted it into a baseball field. It's beautiful. What does a cricket field look like?
Well, a cricket field, as best I can understand, is a one big, gigantic oval, and you can hit the ball, the cricket ball, in any different direction. So the batter can hit it behind him as well. So they position fielders behind him, and so it takes place in what would be shallow center field of a baseball diamond. And so, in fact, it was a little harder out there in center field because they still kept the clay down and just put grass over it. And they didn't want to tamper with that because... And it depends on who you ask as to how legitimate this is. There are the ashes of some of the famous cricket players over the years have been buried underneath that, what they call a cricket patch, I believe is what that is out there. So, it's a big oval, and one of the things that the fans loved most was foul balls because the ball does not go in the stands very often in cricket, and when it does, you have to throw it back. So they were fascinated by this concept that they could hang on to any ball that came into the crowd.
Wow. Boy, what a great story. I hope you're enjoying this. I am listening to it. The other thing you told me, some of the messages from former cricket players, some of the great cricket players have actually put messages in the clubhouse, so to speak, for the current players. Kind of interesting, like Babe Ruth leaving a message.
Yeah, you know, the person that they consider the quote-unquote Babe Ruth of cricket over there actually signed an autograph for a young fan back in 1928. And that saying that he wrote on the notepad for the young child is actually been framed and put right near the exit to the clubhouse so that the players see that every time. And they've offered to redo the clubhouse and make it more modern. And the players have turned that down, saying that they really like the history because it hasn't changed in 150 years or however long it's been.
Well, I'm glad to get your perspective on it, which is very positive because from a baseball standpoint, I'm not sure a club wants to do it, as you said. All the intrusions into the normal routine of a baseball player. But it sounds really, listening to you, that from your perspective and everyone who went there, very positive.
I think it was on the Diamondback side. I think the Dodgers, as Zach Greinke kind of made public, and Andre Ethier had some things to say, I don't think they were overly thrilled with going. But the Diamondbacks seemed to, for whatever reason, kind of embrace it. And Paul Goldschmidt said, hey, we could be, taking a bus ride to Surprise or Goodyear, Arizona today and playing a meaningless game instead of getting to see this historic place and to get out and see the city a little bit and actually play two games that mean something quicker than anybody else does. So, but certainly from a baseball standpoint, it was a challenge getting ready early, and certainly it was a long flight, and coming back was really the challenge as far as jet lag goes. But they seemed to kind of embrace it, even though it didn't go as well as they would have liked to on the field results. They seemed to embrace it a little bit better than the Dodgers did.
All right, the local food. Local food, different, good? How do you think?
Local food's pretty similar. It feels pretty similar to being in America. It's a little more expensive over there. Sydney's ranked as the fifth most expensive city in the world, apparently. And New York is about 20 in that ranking. So that should tell you how expensive things are in there. And what they didn't tell us until about 3 days in is that the reason that is because the tips are kind of figured into the whole package. So really, you don't need a tip. And it kind of makes sense after they told me that because the cab driver kept trying to give me back change. And I kept saying, no, hang on to it. And he kept saying, no, only $17. And I kept trying to give him to $20. So, everything was a little different. They had a little different take on things. But it felt pretty similar to being almost like in a city like San Francisco because there was the water there. There were some hills. And there were some, you know, some cultural things. So a lot of players did remark that it kind of reminded them of San Francisco from that standpoint.
Wow, beautiful. Great story, Steve. Thanks so much. Appreciate it. Sounds like a good trip. You should be a travel agent.
Oh, my pleasure, Mark. I should point out that A.J. Pollock proposed to his girlfriend when they were over there, and one of the PR guys proposed to his girlfriend, too. So it was they turned it into a winning trip.
All right, that's Steve Gilbert, MLB.com. You can follow him all the time through MLB, and does a nice job covering the Diamondbacks. All right, more coming up right here on KMBR 680, the sports leader.